Hi there, it's Marla with the Narrate team. In this week's message, we get to hear a conversation between Kate and her good friend and mentor, Tim Foote. Tim, a fellow Australian, was instrumental in connecting Kate with Narrate as the worship leader. Enjoy the message as we take a closer look into the world of worship and friendship that connects Tim and Kate.
So this is the first time I've ever done an interview, and I couldn't really pick a better person to interview as my best friend, mentor, and legend, Tim Foote. We might need a translator because we're both Australian.
Yeah, they're in trouble now.
But Narrate to me is all about people's stories, and I think you've got one of the most unique stories I've ever heard. So do you want to just let us, everybody know a little bit about how you ended up here in Longmont, Colorado?
Should I start way back at the beginning?
Yeah, all the way back to Tasmania.
Okay. So Tasmanian born and raised, and raised in the church, which, as Kate knows, is fairly unique. You had that too, considering Australia is mostly a secular nation. And a healthy church upbringing, which is also can be fairly unique. An interesting stat about Australia is, you might know this stat, Kate, is that 90% of Australians only have one parent that was born there. Did you know that?
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And both my parents were born there and all of my grandparents.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
So I'm dinky die Aussie, mate.
We are a multicultural society.
Yeah. And not only that, I'm fifth generation Tasmanian. And Tasmania was settled as a penal colony from London, England, with prisoners being sent out for like stealing loaves of bread and chickens to feed their family. So my great-great-great-great-great-grandfather came out as a convict and did time, and was pardoned, sent for his mother, and then redeemed the family. And then my grandfather was a great churchman, but also a politician, a good one, and was knighted by the Queen for services to the state.
Wow.
So our family went from convict to being knighted by the Queen, which is a big deal for us, not so much for Americans. But anyway, loved the performing arts, learned a lot of musical skills and acting skills, drama skills in the church, which was a great place to hone those skills.
Mm-hmm.
Got into television work in my late teenage years. I worked in kids' television, and I played in bars before I was old enough to play in bars and restaurants and that kind of thing, as well as church. And then I got accepted to the Conservatorium in Tasmania of Music, which is a big deal.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I just felt God, some mentors in my life were challenging me, and I felt God saying, you need to defer this for a year and try ministry. Well, at that time, there was no course for worship ministry.
Mm-hmm.
Just wasn't. I mean, Hillsong was starting, and they just didn't have that. And I had a mentor back in the day challenge me about this position in Sydney at Northside Community Church. It wasn't a full-time position. And so I said to my folks, I said, look, I'm going to give this a try, and I might be back in 5 weeks. But I'm not going to know if I don't go give this a try.
Mm-hmm.
And I still haven't gone back. And so I moved over. I started working as a worship leader at Northside. And that was the next nearly 10 years of my life,
mm-hmm.
was growing in worship ministry. I'd be working 3 to 5 nights a week. And that's when we met, that's what I was doing.
Yeah, so that's where we met.
Mm-hmm.
And so... And so I did many of those gigs with you. So in preparation for this, I asked some people in the worship team up at Narrate what they would like me to ask you, because they've heard me refer to you so often. One of them said they wanted to know, how we met and what your first impressions of me were. So that's them asking, not me.
So I specifically remember walking into Northside, the church where I was worship minister, they called it that those days. And a guy from my music team, the sax player,
mm-hmm.
he had a band that you were playing in, and he asked if they could practice at the church.
Mm-hmm.
And I walked in, and there was Kate, long hair, guitar, playing in Dave's band. And Dave introduced me, and I think it was then that I said, man, it'd be great to have you come play with us sometime.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, you came back, tried out the church. Mm-hmm. You might have to correct little details of this story. And I remember the first time, Kate, that you played with us, you wouldn't even turn your amp up.
No.
You didn't turn an amplifier up. And but you just started doing life with us and plugging in with our community and turning your amp up a little bit more, a little bit more.
I think Lucky Phil, the sound guy, used to turn it up when I wasn't looking.
But yeah, I mean, just from those days to what God did with your life has been one of the greatest joys for me to watch.
So I couldn't feel more blessed by being a part of your life with you guys. That made a huge difference for me, and so much so that people are often asking how I ended up at Narrate. And I think a lot of that had to do with coffee at Zenos, mm-hmm. Which was just up in Crow's Nest. And
knew where the church was.
Yeah. Knew where the church was back in Sydney. And that was, at the time, I was at university doing business, Bachelor of Business, and really not enjoying it. And I remember I was just having coffee about 40 minutes or something, and you pretty much changed, well, you would say changed the trajectory mm-hmm. of what my life ended up being, which was just saying, why don't you try doing music?
Yeah.
And nobody had ever said that to me, ever. Mm. And because we'd spent so much time together, I knew that meant something. And I actually ended up leaving university the next week. But
glad that worked out for you.
It worked out really well. I mean, I just ended up doing things that I loved, and it brought us to this place. So
you told me that you were doing a business degree at university, and my response was, what are you doing that for? And that got into the what else would I do?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's people have spoken into my life and changed the direction, and it was an honor to be able to be a part of that in your life. What I love about God is how he writes multiple stories at the same time, mm-hmm. and how your story has been interweaved with my story, and that's happening so many times for each of us, and we don't even realize it. So I was at Northside in Sydney and doing the entertainment stuff for about 9 years. Back in 99, Rick Russo, who's the senior pastor at what I call my home church here in mm-hmm. here in the US, was keynote speaker at a conference in Queensland, which is one of the northern states of Australia. They flew me up to be guest worship leader, and we just hit it off, loved working together. And he was only spending the weekend in Australia, which is nuts.
Mm-hmm.
And he was flying out of Sydney Monday morning and flying back on the same flight as me to Sydney. And I said, well, you're hanging out with me. And he saw me lead worship for our Sunday night service. Maybe you were playing that night.
I think I was talking about this with Mandy the other night. I think I actually was there because uh-huh. I remember you coming in straight out of somewhere in
yeah.
Queensland.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
So he came back, and then I showed him around the city. I dropped him at his hotel, I think, at like 4 in the morning. He flew out at 6. But we stayed in touch for a couple of years, just emailing every now and then. And then actually my wife Mandy was over here for some work in 2001 June. And I said, look, I'll come. Because there's some music stuff I want to do. And while we're there, I'd like to go to Praise in the Rockies, which is a thing that happens in Essence Park. And we can drop by Lifebridge and actually see if it's as good as Rick says it is, because senior pastors have a tendency to over-exaggerate things. And not your lead pastor.
No.
Anyway, and so we dropped by. And on that trip, that was when Rick said, you need to join our staff. And I was like, no. We're not leaving Sydney, where it's great. There's so many things happening. We've got such a community. There's some exciting things happening at the church. That's not going to happen. And he was pretty aggressive about it. Not in an awful way, but just he really felt like he wanted me to join the team. And so we came. He just said, just don't shut off to it and let's bring you back over here in September.
Mm-hmm.
And so we did that. And God was revealing his plan and closing doors and opening new ones. And we were over here in September, and we came to a leadership team retreat for Lifebridge. And then my first weekend leading worship at Lifebridge, which was kind of like an interview weekend, us checking them out, them checking us out, was the weekend following September 11, 2001.
Oh, wow.
And so that was crazy. And even after that, we were just sure that this is where God wanted us to be. And mm-hmm. so we said yes to that call. And Mandy and I had been married, I think, probably like 18 months. And mm-hmm. we moved to the other side of the world. So that's how we ended up here. It was really interesting because there were so many things that I was thinking weren't going to work out to make this happen.
Mm-hmm.
There were so many obstacles, and you got a similar story. It's like, you know,
yep.
9/11 just happened. The visa won't come through. There was just like, okay, we'll say yes to this step of the journey, but that's mm-hmm. going to be it. I mean, that's just too big an obstacle. And God just kept taking care of the obstacles. Mm-hmm. And I've talked to so many people that have made the move from Australia or other countries to the US, and their stories have been horrendous about how they got their visas and all that kind of thing. And just looking back at how amazing our story, and even your story. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was a big weight for Narae. It was a big mm-hmm. weight for LifeBridge, but it was pretty amazing how it all happened.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I remember nobody was more upset when you were moving than me. And I took great comfort in the fact that you were saying, oh, but, if, you know, there's a lot of obstacles. It may not even happen. I was just like, oh. But little did I know that not God wasn't just writing your guys' story, but he was also writing mine.
Yeah.
And I actually, that's one of the things that's really stood out to me about your guys' story since then, is you said, I thought that God was bringing me over to the States to be a worship leader. But yeah. what he really was doing was building a family.
Mm-hmm.
So what's a little bit of what was waiting for you as mm-hmm. you started into yeah. life over here?
So it's amazing to think, you know, Mandy and I have been married for nearly 18 years, it'll be 18 years in January. And most of that time, all but 18 months, we've lived in the US, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that was pretty amazing. What we didn't know was that we would struggle with infertility. And that was a tough journey, and one that we had to move through and grieve through. And then God called us to adoption. Mm-hmm. And he called Mandy before he called me. I was kind of thinking, well, you know, I've grieved that, and I can think life could be pretty uncomplicated with just the two of us.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't want to adopt to fulfill a need of something that we felt was incomplete. We wanted to adopt because we felt God calling us to that.
Mm-hmm.
And called Mandy and then brought me along on the journey too. And then we grew up, that's how we grew our family. And we adopted Joey in 2007 at birth from mm-hmm. the south side of Chicago. And then 18 months later, we felt God calling us to a second one, and we got a call from Joey's birth family saying that there was a full biological sibling on its way, and the birth mom couldn't raise that child, and would we be open to considering a second adoption? And we just started the process anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So we ended up adopting Jacob in 2009, and we also at birth, so they were hours old when we had them. And when we had them in our arms, and then they were born on the same day,
yeah,
2 years apart.
Exactly 2 years apart.
Yeah, so amazing. God was just showing off at that point. but we didn't know. I mean, if we'd stayed in Australia, we would have been probably too old to adopt. And mm-hmm. so we didn't know God was doing something there too. And Mandy's British born and raised in Melbourne. I'm Tasmanian born and raised. Our boys are biracial from the south side of Chicago. And so it's a pretty amazing, unique experience. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In my experience, when I was moving from Australia to America, mm. and that process took, as Narae knows, quite a while with the visa and everything.
Mm.
And it's frustrating because, like you say, there's a lot of red light, orange light, green light mm. moments where you keep stopping and starting all the time. I remember during that time you said to me that faith isn't built in the house of certainty.
Mm.
And so I know my experience in trusting God in that time really stretched my my relationship with him and really put in some very solid roots, which have only helped me since being over. And I was just wondering what that experience was like for you.
Yeah, it was kind of like being on the cliff edge of faith. You know, the Message version of one of the Beatitudes is we're blessed when we're at the end of our rope, because it's less of us and more of God and his rule. And I think when you're in the middle of an amazing season like that and you've got no choice but to trust, it's sweet. There's blessing when we're at the end of our rope, and that's the blessing, because you're closer to God and you really experience the full weight and impact of his faithfulness.
Mm-hmm.
I remember, you know, when we first got here, I would say to Manny, man, I wish we could just fast forward the calendar a year or two mm-hmm. years, because what people don't understand is every day is a challenge. It was yeah. tougher on you because there weren't two of you. There was two of us, and we could process it, and you called us many times. We could frankly, I was building ministry. Mandy was doing all of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But now that I'm mid-40s, I'm learning I don't want to fast-forward the clock anytime. I want to save it each moment because it's going quick. But back then, I wish we'd just fast-forward and feel at home here. Well, when we did get to that place, you know, that 18-month, two-year mark, we missed the feeling of having to cling to God.
Mm,
so it's like, you know, the blessing of that and having to hold on, you know, we were more comfortable now, and we had to be so disciplined about leaning in, mm-hmm. whereas there's no choice but to lean in. When you were talking to me about, you know, that faith piece, it reminds me, and you guys probably heard this about when Mother Teresa was asked was asking a guy what he would want her to pray for him.
Right.
And he said clarity, and she said, no, I absolutely will not pray for mm-hmm. clarity, because we don't want that's trust. I'll mm-hmm. pray for trust. And I think that's a lesson in life. That's we can never have certainty. We can never have true clarity. Things are always going to change, and all we can really cling to and pray for is trust and faith.
Mm-hmm. Looking back at Northside, I remember being at a barbecue with a team of 50 people that you'd built in drama, sound, music, all that kind of stuff. And I was looking around going, wow, this is neat. I'm part of this. This is really cool, you know. And that took time and a lot of relationship to build that time. But then at a worship mentor gathering, I was looking around at something you were facilitating. It's like 50, 65 people all going back to teams of their own.
Mm.
And I thought, that's really blessed multiplication.
Mm.
That's like your faithfulness and God's faithfulness meeting in the middle.
Right.
And so just talk to us about some of the new challenges and things that you've stepped into over here. So not only leading LifeBridge, but also with Slingshot, and you're working as a lead associate with them.
Yeah, it's interesting looking back at my time at Northside and the valuable lessons I learned at such a young age of building teams and mobilizing volunteers and helping volunteers see their volunteer position as so, so important.
Mm-hmm.
And then moving to a church that was a lot bigger, you know, from 300 to 400 to 3,000, where I was able to have staff, and then what I learned from mobilizing volunteers to be able to build a team around me that complemented my strengths and weaknesses, and I was able to complement theirs, and that's something that I love. You know, pastoral ministry is a real joy for me. And so I spent those first 2 to 5 years at LifeBridge here in the US just really, really building community and building a ministry. And a friend of mine, Monty Kelso, who's the mm-hmm. president of Slingshot Group, staffing and coaching group out of California, he'd been a friend for quite some time and kind of part of my tribe community around mm-hmm. the country. And he and Stan Endicott, who's a guru in the worship world nationally, had started this group. I remember when they shot out an email blast to their network, and I received this about this, that they were starting to help churches, you know, find staff and coach staff. And I started actually referring churches to them.
Ah, okay. Yeah.
And then one of the churches I had pointed their way, Monty was in town. It was a church we'd planted from LifeBridge, you know, 30 plus years ago before I came.
Mm-hmm.
But they'd had a rough history with worship leaders, worship pastors, have the right person. They needed help finding the right person. And Monty came into town to do that search, met with me for breakfast and said, why don't you try this? Why don't you partner with me and try this? And I was coming out of a season where I'd felt God saying, you just need to focus. But he was kind of lifting the blinders again. And I said, you know what? Pardon me. If you'd said this a month ago, I wouldn't have been ready. But I think I'm ready to give this a try. And I jumped in, and there was no partnership. Monty just took his hands off, and I just went for it and loved it.
Mm-hmm.
Like a duck to water, just loved doing this. And from that point on, that side of my life started to grow, the staffing, coaching side. And Slingshot had just been in the worship lane, the worship space, up until that time. And 6 months after I joined them, they expanded to every area of ministry. So mm-hmm. every department, you know, senior leadership, teaching, you know, children's, students, mm-hmm. worship, every area. And Stan and Monty invited me to lead up the worship and production area, which is a huge honor because it was their baby. And so that has gradually grown and grown and grown to a point now where that's my full-time role.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm still able to stay part-time engaged at LifeBridge, at our home church, where I lead 26 weekends a year and still engage with the staff when I'm in town. And so the opportunity to still have a foot in the local church but be able to help the national church, the Big C mm-hmm. church, build remarkable teams and stay healthy is a huge gift.
So how would you, in a nutshell, how would you describe Slingshot for those that aren't familiar?
the reference point for people who wouldn't be familiar with something like this is we're like recruiters. Mm-hmm. But I say to people, we're not recruiters. We're more heart hunters. We're more, and even the word hunter is kind of a little too aggressive. Mm. We're a ministry. We want to be about where God is doing his work, and we want to be a part of that. And staffing in the church has become one of the biggest giant problems. Mm-hmm. And churches are seeing the need to outsource this to people who are doing it day in and day out, and also coaching. I always say we'd much rather coach a leader to stay long-term, break through something and stay long-term than be finding staff, but we're always going to be finding staff. That's mm-hmm. just the nature of kingdom work. And so we're about making that transitional time really healthy for the candidate leader and for the church.
Right.
And so we'll come in and get to know the church, and we'll get to know their unique brand of ministry, and then we'll go out and we'll find the right leaders to add to their team to continue to achieve the mission and goals of the church. And that also feeds into a lot of coaching. So a lot of my trips these days, I'm meeting with teams and coaching teams, and then I'm coaching my own team at Slingshot to help that staffing process to continue to be a healthy thing.
So there's unique things about people and their skill set, and there's unique things about churches, and you really find ways to bring them together.
Yeah, one of my big passions in all that, Kate, is just helping churches discover and lean into their unique language. You know, what's our style of worship? I don't want a church to say, oh, we're Hillsong, or we're Bethel, or we're Jesus Culture. I want a church to say, we take a bit from here and a bit from there and a bit from here, and this is what makes us unique and different. Yeah. And this is what we want to do moving forward. Actually, that was one of the reasons, one of the things that captured Stan, our founder, when he talked to Adam about the open role. And Adam was saying, we're not like, we're different. We're just, we're not like what else is out there. We're more alternative to kind of sound. I remember Stan calling me and saying, you know, I talked to this pastor up in Helena, Montana. I had to look that up on the map. In Helena, Montana, and, you know, they're a growing, emerging church. I'm not sure they could afford our full process, but I want to help them. And I'm like, oh, great. But what I didn't realize was, God was writing your story. And Adam and I have become great friends. And it's been a true honor just to watch Narrate grow and take new territory and to see the impact that that you guys are making as a church. And it's great.
Because we had just had lunch and talked about a really great lunch talking about worship that day, unknown to either of us that afternoon you would get a call from Stan. And then you said driving home or something. You had this.
Like, hang on a second.
Yeah. People always ask me, how did you end up in Helena, Montana? I was like, well, I was friends with Tim.
And you know, not only that, but you had been sensing God was going to do something.
I mean,
there had been like probably two other trips prior to that you kept saying to me, God's just doing something and I'm not sure what it is, but he's doing that. And that's, frankly, that's how I ended up in both places, you know, Sydney from Tasmania and Longmont from Sydney, Colorado from Sydney, because I sense God saying, trust me, because I'm about to shake things up here.
It was interesting because I actually had inquired with the lawyer we ended up using a year prior, because I felt like there was something there. And it was a very broad but very repetitive prayer of mine that I would be used somewhere in ministry, overseas was okay, using my gifts, and that was just the prayer. But it went for about over 2 years, and then I remember 2 weeks or so prior to that lunch and prior to that opportunity, a couple of people that I was working with up in Minnesota both pulled me aside, and this had never happened before, but pulled me aside and, have you ever thought about doing ministry? And I was thinking in my head, I was like, yes, but not that I would say out loud except for in prayer.
And that's so a scary prayer.
Turn the amp up.
But see, and that's a scary prayer, because, you know, we pray a prayer like that and we give God our availability, he does amazing things. And that very prayer, you're saying that God would use my abilities. He's used abilities of yours at Narrate that you didn't even realize you had.
Yeah, that's very true.
And it's been amazing to watch that.
And that's the thing. You're so aware, or I'm so aware at least, it's really not me. It's what God wanted to bring, you know, through me wherever I happen to be. And that's the same thing that I'm very honored to see when I'm hanging out with you. What are some things that you see trend-wise? Do you see some things across the nation or across the churches that really speak to that are kind of emerging?
I think the biggest thing in the worship space that I see emerging is a focus on the holistic experience. And it's like, it's no longer just about leading a bunch of songs and having a message. It's about how do we cohesively work together to take people on an experiential journey from the moment they arrive to the moment they leave, and how does that flow into the week, and what does it mean to live a life of worship? And so I think the big thing I'm seeing is churches realizing that they just have to get intentionality of language and branding of who they are, be aggressively more them, and how does that translate into the entire experience when a person is connecting with the church in any way at all? I mean, the front door now is the website. And then the follow close second by the gatherings on a weekend. And how is that moving the mission forward in important ways? And also, there's more people to reach than there are churches, than there are churches that are really focused on making a difference. And so I say, hey, don't worry about what other churches is starting up down the street, because we know now that there are, you know, Life Church has got a ton of campuses, and Hillsong are popping up all over the world. And some churches will go, oh, they're coming to my town. What's that going to mean for us? Hey, there's more people. What it means for us is that we work out better who we are and we become more aggressive about who we are, because we're not them, and God has given us a unique message and a unique way to reach this culture, and we have to continue to seek out what that is. And so I think I'm seeing that that crossover specifically into the worship space, because because worship, I mean, the worship leaders, the worship teams that serve in that ministry are culture carriers, and you get to be a part of shaping that message.
Yeah, for sure. When I was preparing for this, I did ask a few people what they would like me to ask about worship. one friend said, why is it that we sing? Why don't we get together and paint or play Legos or juggle? You know, what is it about singing specifically? What is it, what's the value of worship?
Yeah, the truth is you could get together and paint. And you could get together and build Lego. And some churches do provide opportunities to worship in different ways, which I think is really, really great. But we sing because something spiritual happens when we gather together and we raise our voices together. And, you know, I often say to people, the most I learn about worship leading, I learn in the piano bar. Because, and you sat there night after night with me, because the same people would come back and lots of people would come. And it's because people have two innate needs, and that is to be needed and known. And I think when we come together and we raise our voices together, there's an amazing sense of belonging that happens, but there's also some kind of spiritual sense of connection that happens. Now, not everybody's worship language is singing. Some people's prime worship language is painting, but there's something special that, and it's been happening for centuries and centuries and centuries. And when we gather together in the right way, you know, it's the two or three, where two or three gathered in my name, it doesn't say gather and sing, but something happens when we gather and we have those connection points. When I'm coaching worship leaders, I always say, just focus on there being one or two connection points for everybody in the room. Not everybody's going to connect with everything. And so when you choose songs that are singable, choose songs that are going to bring energy to the room, that are going to create moments, but not just songs. Think about creativity. Think about spoken word transition. Think about scripture. And then, of course, we have the teaching portion. How does prayer play a part in the worship gathering? But music is a very emotive thing. And it's why you guys utilize often secular songs and calls to worship and mix it up a little bit. Music just has, it's a gift from God, and it has power. And I think something special happens when we raise our voices together. I saw it happening in the secular world, and yet the God piece was missing. And so to have that stark comparison, and then to be in the church and see what happens when it's in an environment where the Holy Spirit is moving, is just powerful.
So what does worship do for God?
The scripture I keep going back to is that He delights in our worship. And I love it when my kids climb into my lap. I love it when, you know, I came home from a trip late last night, and I went up and, you know, just snuggled up with my boys for like a minute just to let them know I was home. And Jacob, who will sleep through World War III, just as I left, was leaving the room, just said, "I love you, Dad." Mm-hmm. And that for me is just such a tangible picture into God, the Father heart of God. And I think when we sing to Him, when we tell Him how much we love Him, it just blesses His heart.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it draws us closer. It opens up our perspective of who He is. It connects us to Him, and for Him personally, it just delights His heart.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's something really powerful about coming together each week, and by singing, I always feel like it's really saying that you're trusting what God's mm-hmm. doing, and no matter what the circumstances that are floating about, because those things change week to week, but God doesn't change, and so to come in and step into that together.
Oh, yeah. Powerful. Another analogy for me, and it's not so big in the US, it is in college football, but in Australian rules football, each club has a club song. You know, right. That used to really hit us. And it's happening a little bit more in the NFL now, like the Denver Broncos, the best team in the NFL. they have a song, a fight song, and all the college teams have fight songs. And when your team wins in Australia, you should hear the fans sing the club song.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is a bunch of football fans, most of who can't sing. You should hear the players in the club rooms. It's always online when a mm-hmm. team wins on their club side, right. Their players. And it's horrendous. Like, they can't sing. They got no tempo. But they are singing with all their might. Mm-hmm. Why do you think that is? It's because mm-hmm. they're celebrating.
Mm-hmm.
And I think too often we get so messed up and confused about what worship in the church is. But we're celebrating victory, and we're celebrating our trust in God. But there's also lament. We're also struggling and admitting our dependence on God. And there's just doing that through song and songs. That's why the hymns are so powerful, because mm-hmm. people who've grown up in the church, it reminds us of God's faithfulness.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah, that whole football club song idea. It's like that's pure worship.
Mm-hmm.
And I think too often in the church, we forget what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a pure form of worship.
Mm-hmm. You've been so instrumental in my life, and thus then through instrumental in the life of Narrow.
Mm.
And so I'm just wondering how, if you had any closing thoughts, just as we continue to grow as worshippers and as a family and a church environment in Helena.
Yeah. Don't underestimate the impact of Narrate. Because you and Adam are so good at keeping up a great network of leaders and people in churches all around the country, that, you know, I think your gather scatter model has blessed a lot of churches. I mean, I know after I first talked to Adam, that was, you know, part of our language here at LifeBridge. You know, it still is. So don't underestimate the impact. But as you guys grow as worshippers, I would just encourage you to continue to embrace the uniqueness of this community of believers. And that's what I love about how you've been embraced by Narrate, Kate, and the people that you've brought along with you, and the staff team that Adam has assembled, and his understanding of what makes you unique. I think that the more you guys understand that about, you know, this is why I love my church, you know, we're this, and this, and verbalize that and invite people along on that journey. And then inviting people into that deeper worship relationship, whatever that means, realizing it is beyond music, but music is a big part of it. And encouraging people to really open their hearts to the experience and the journey that God is leading you on as a church. It's such a privilege to journey together mm-hmm. in community. Mm-hmm. You know, so many people throw their arms up and say, "Hey, you don't have to go to church to be a Christian." No, you don't. No, you don't. But you miss out on a huge opportunity to grow.
Mm-hmm.
A huge opportunity to grow. And regular attendance is so important. It's a family.
Mm-hmm.
And embrace the family, because you look back after 20 years at one church and be so grateful for the ups and the downs,
mm-hmm.
because that's how God moves in the valleys and on the peaks.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Sure.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for making the time. And
thanks
for journeying with us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
I'll get up there one day.
Yeah, for sure. If you would like to engage further with Narrate Church, you can find contact information online. www.narratechurch.org. We would love to hear from you.